Wrapping up a very busy week, Friday, July 8th, 2022, right here on Connecticut Today, I spoke to State Senate GOP leader Kevin Kelly of Stratford about proposed health insurance rate hikes that could hit policyholders who bought coverage from the Access Health CT Exchange. University of New Haven political science professor Dr. Matthew Schmidt talked about the assassination of former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and the resignation of British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. I also had a few thoughts on the continued debate over abortion rights in the U.S. If you or someone you know or love, maybe a family member, friend, or acquaintance, buys health care insurance off of the Connecticut Affordable Care Act marketplace or the Obamacare marketplace that we talk about a lot on this show and on Lisa's show and on Melissa's show when sign-up periods come every year. If you or, you know, somebody who does that purchasing, you or that someone are facing some possible huge, and I mean big, price and premium increases. And to talk about that right now and how this may possibly be stopped or slowed down, if possible, Republican State Senate Leader Kevin Kelly, our buddy from Stratford. Kevin, hi. It's Paul. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm not too bad yourself, Paul.
I'm good, Kevin. I'm good. Living the dream. All my limbs still work. I can dress myself, so I'm good. But on another note, Kevin, you know, I'm reading this story here about these proposed rate increases, Kevin, and I thought I missed a decimal point. Like, I'm looking at these numbers, and I'm saying, you know, I'm seeing 204, and I'm like, oh, is that 2.04%? No, it's 20%, 14%. 20-something, 30-something percent. Kevin, explain to my listeners what exactly is going on here and why are these proposed rate increases for these people so high?
Well, Paul, it's unfortunate that you're not looking at a decimal somewhere else and that it is a 20% on average increase. And this is something that the Connecticut Insurance Department does on a yearly basis. They're the state regulator of private insurance. And insurance products come and carriers go before this to make sure that they are assessing the risk and able to deliver on the promise that they make to cover insurance costs or healthcare costs when people pay their premium. Now, here you are. It's going up 20% on average, and they're really pointing at a number of issues. The first and foremost is obviously that most families are feeling on average or in their normal life is the 40-year high in inflation, that has a substantial and significant cost that has increased the cost of health care as everything else, groceries, gas, and the like. So that's one factor. The other is that Connecticut, over the past couple years, has been forcing and shifting many folks to what is called Medicaid, which is a government-run healthcare program, maybe called Husky. And when people get put on Husky, that provides medical coverage. You know, government pays the medical cost at a discount. And when that discount is paid for, let's say they pay 60 cents on a dollar of care, that other 40 cents gets shifted to private insurance. So what we're looking at is the private insurance. So the basic move of individuals to Medicaid hopes that the people paying for private insurance underwrites that care. And then the last and most significant is that over the past couple years under the American Relief Fund, there were subsidies on the exchange. And we knew that the subsidies would evaporate one day. Well, that day is coming now. It's going to come in 2023. And when those subsidies evaporate, people are now going to be required to make up that difference. This is something that myself and my Republican colleagues we recognized that this was going to happen, that the subsidies were going to evaporate. We believe that we should put the people in a position that even if they evaporate, that the state should have a seamless transition and an ability to provide lower health care premiums. That's why we propose what's called reinsurance. And according to Access Health Connecticut, which is the Connecticut's exchange, this could save as much as $6,000 It's actually more like $6,400 a year. That's more than $500 a month to the average family of four. That's real money, Paul. And believe it or not, for the past several years, we've been unable to even get a vote on that initiative in the Insurance Committee, which is controlled by Democrats. Couldn't even move that forward. And what we were always saying is that if we planned back 2 years ago, that even if, you know, this, let's say this didn't come, either this Congress decides to keep funding this, we're no worse for the wear. But if they didn't, it was going to expose Connecticut families to massive increases.
Kevin, why couldn't you?
Here we are.
Kevin, why couldn't you get that vote? Were the big insurance companies in this state operating here in Connecticut, did they get in the ears and start whispering to the committee chairs there of the majority party saying, don't bring this up for a vote? Why is that?
No, I think it's quite the opposite, Paul. I think that would be something that would be supported by the insurance industry. I think it supports Connecticut jobs. It's just the majority, and that's the Democrat majority in the legislature, had a different view. They wanted more of like a public option. They have more faith in government-run health care, like Medicaid, like Medicare, like the VA system, and they believe that that's a better quality care, which in fact it isn't. And so they didn't want to move this initiative forward and didn't even want to give us a vote on it. I mean, okay, vote no. But I think this is a conversation that is necessary, especially when you see what families are struggling with. They're having trouble paying for groceries, having trouble buying gas to go to work. They're having trouble paying their bills as well as medical services that they receive. And this would be a way, like I said, you know, we would save $500 a month to the average family of four buying health insurance in the state of Connecticut, according to Access Health.
All right.
Which is by no means a Republican organization.
No, not at all. Kevin, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Some interesting stuff here. State Senate Leader Kevin Kelly of Stratford, his reaction to some announced, suggested or requested premium increases that would have to be foot by folks who are buying policies on the Connecticut Access Health website, the Obamacare website, some sizable increases they may be facing. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. So some possible big, very big, averaging about 20% rate increases, possible premium increases for folks who buy insurance through Obamacare on the Access CT Health Insurance exchange. Maybe where do we go from here on this? State Senate Republican Leader Kevin Kelly of Stratford's with us. So, Kevin, these requests now are for in front of the State Insurance Commission, right? So, what can happen there? Can the commission say no? These are way too high. This isn't fair. Could that happen? If that happens, do the insurance providers, Kevin, say, well, guess what? We're getting off the plans here. I mean, what are the scenarios here?
Okay, so the request goes before the commission, the commissioner and the insurance department, who are the state's regulators. And what they're really looking at is whether the insurance companies are properly capitalized to deliver on the promise that they make. So they could knock premiums down. They could also increase premiums if they feel that the insurance carriers are not charging enough. And what I think needs to happen, and I saw that the Attorney General William Tong asked for public hearings. I agree, and we'll be asking for the same public hearings. However, I don't think it should be just before the commissioner in the Department of Insurance during a normal business workday. I think it's something that should be accessible to the public. It's something that probably should happen at the state capitol and maybe at a night or weekend so that people who work can actually get there and have the opportunity to explain to the commissioner and the department that a 20% increase with the inflation that we have is just making Connecticut that much more unaffordable.
So, Kevin, yeah, that's my point here, because we were told, Kevin, early on when Obamacare was set up and these state health exchanges were set up, and I've had the directors of these exchanges on my shows from time to time here and on other stations, that this was a way for folks to get insurance who may not qualify for Husky or Medicaid but want some sort of coverage and to keep the prices down. Well, what happens then, Kevin, and this may be an unanswerable question, but what happens if these prices get so high that it prices people out of having health insurance?
Well, that's the fear that we all have. That's what motivates me to do a lot of the initiatives and proposals that we've made. I listened to the Connecticut families, and it was a decade ago when the Democrats voted the Affordable Care Act in, and when they did that, they made a promise to the people of Connecticut that they were going to have an affordable, accessible, and quality healthcare system. But yet, Paul, here we are a decade later, and you're still seeing 20% increase in premiums. And then the same majority that made the promise is blocking a plan, reinsurance. It's something we've put forward. It's been vetted. It was vetted by Access Health. And they show that we can make savings of up to $6,000 a year. That's real money. That would help thwart increases of 20%. But yet it falls on deaf ears with the majority. And I think we need to change. That's one way to make a difference, is to make a change in Hartford. What we need are more legislators and reps and senators who are going to listen to their constituents and go to Hartford and focus on bringing Connecticut to make it more affordable. Because right now, under this current leadership that's been totally dominant at the Capitol for the past decade, isn't getting the job done for middle-class Connecticut.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Kevin Kelly, GOP State Senate leader from Stratford. Kevin, we'll keep an eye on this. Appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
You bet.
All right, Kevin Kelly explaining it that apparently because so many people got shifted onto Husky, which is a Medicaid program, and the Medicaid reimbursement rates to the insurers are very low. They've got to make up that money somewhere else, and they're trying to do it on the Affordable Health Care Act exchanges. Man, I mean, it's like a shell game, kids, isn't it? Right? One from column A, one from column B. Can't spend the money here, so we're going to spend it there. Or can't collect the money here or make people pay up here, so we're going to make them do it over there. Jesus God. All right. And I now look, I have a few friends that buy stuff and buy coverage through the, through Access Health CT. You know, they say it's okay coverage. It's not great, but they want something for, catastrophic care, heart attack, brain hemorrhage, stuff like that. That's the stuff that'll drive you to bankruptcy. But even my friends are saying, because I ask them, how much is that? And we talk about it, and they say, yeah, it was supposed to be cheap. It ain't really cheap. And every so often, we'd like to take a look at what's happening around the globe. Very chaotic over the past few days. Joining us right now, return visit from Dr. Matthew Schmidt. He's an associate professor of national security, international affairs, and political science at the University of New Haven. He's a recognized expert on strategic analysis and foreign affairs, U.S. politics, security, and military matters. Matt, hi, it's Paul. Good afternoon, sir. How are you? Great to have you back. How you been?
It's good to be here. Thank you. Just got back from Djibouti on a research trip there. So. I
have a friend whose son just did a military tour at a U.S. Base there, Matt, in Djibouti. It's an interesting area, isn't it?
It is actually. It was on post, so that's great. Yeah, Camp Le Meunier.
Yes. Boy, I tell you, Matt. Let's talk a few things here to talk about. Boy, the assassination early today, Japanese time, late yesterday, our time, of Shinzo Abe, who served quite a few years as Japan's prime minister. He stepped down a few years ago because of health concerns. He was making a speech leading up to some parliamentary elections. But I'll tell you something, Matt. Whenever any leader, present or past, is assassinated, it really is a jarring thing. Talk about Shinzo Abe's legacy, his power there, and I'm reading that he was still, Matt, a very powerful person in Japanese politics.
That's right. He had actually been a prime minister twice. He stepped down the first time after a year for health reasons, the same health reasons he stepped down the second time. But he came into power, his mission in life really was to remove Japan from its World War II past, was to say, we can have a military, not just a defense force, that we should no longer tie ourselves to what we did in World War II. And this made him, quite controversial around the world, particularly in China. And you've seen a lot of that response today. But that's what he will be best known for, is the person who tried to really push Japan further, past its World War II past, its history.
Shocking. He was, I guess, Matt, making a speech heading into some parliamentary elections this weekend. And sure enough, as the time went on after he was shot and his condition was reported to be not good, the individual that shot him was pretty much standing in back of him, not that far away. And he killed him with what's been called a homemade gun.
Yeah, I don't have much to say, except it was pretty strange to see. On video, quite stunning. I was, live on Twitter last night when it broke, and was really surprised. And in Japan, there's no gun culture, right?
Yeah.
And so this kind of shooting is absolutely alien to the culture, and it's really shaken the country.
And Matt, it just shows maybe, and I don't want to miscalculate this, but because of a lack of that gun culture, Matt, is that why when you look at that picture, a lot of Americans who are used to seeing, layers of security around presidents and chief executives here, is that why a lot of Americans may look at that and say, geez, like, how was the guy able to get that close or not?
Yeah, no, I think that's true. You have security, of course, but you don't have the kind of triple layer security that you have in the United States, because you're not looking for shooters and balconies and things like that. So the security is really in proximity to the person themselves. And, and the shooter apparently walked up with a homemade gun. It'll be interesting to see when we find out how that gun was made, if it was 3D printed or something else, and essentially pulled it out of their jacket and fired at close range.
Dr. Matthew Schmidt is the guest. Matt, hang on. We'll be right back to you. When we come back, we'll talk about what the heck's going on in Great Britain. Their last three prime ministers all resigning for one reason or another. And is Britain a little bit adrift right now? More with Dr. Matthew Schmidt first. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. A return visit by one of our go-to guys on foreign policy, world affairs, Dr. Matthew Schmidt, associate professor of the National Security, International Affairs, and political science at the University of New Haven. Matt, Boris Johnson, I guess a lot of people figure this might happen. It's been one scandal after another with him. Maybe he'll comb his hair now, Matt. I said that, you didn't. That's just me. I'm sorry. Couldn't resist there. Boy, the last three prime ministers, Matt Schmidt, all resigning in Britain. What goes here? Is it a party dynamic? Is it a people dynamic there? What's going on in British politics?
Well, Bojo is a go-go now, but I couldn't resist either. It's Brexit. David Cameron left after Brexit was passed, and then Bojo's successor, Theresa May, left after she was unable to get the withdrawal agreement through that she had promised. And then, Bojo came into office essentially saying that he was going to stick it to the EU. So that's really where we're at. This issue of the UK's relationship to the European Union is really still out there. It's really still the thing that is at base driving British politics.
But would he have survived if he didn't, stumble over, he was out drinking when everybody else was locked out with COVID. He apparently had nominated some Tory member of parliament who had sexual assault allegations against him or something like that. To use a tennis term here, Matt, these are largely unforced errors, right, or not?
Oh, absolutely. But they're who Boris Johnson is. He came in with that kind of persona and he sold himself that way to the British public, right, who sort of voted for him as a none of the above kind of candidate. Right. They knew what they were getting and they wanted Boris to take down the establishment. And that's what he's done, with this list of scandal after scandal. And it just finally became too much. And I'm not sure it was even a scandal as much as it was the way he handled it, the way he continued to thumb himself at the British public and at the political institutions.
I find it interesting, Matt Schmidt, when stuff like this happens. So, you know, he resigns. He says, I'll be there until a successor is named. You know, you get elections, for example, that happen often, so more often than here in countries like England. Now there's a rumor Netanyahu may be planning a comeback in Israel. There may be elections there happening. Matt, I often wonder how the American public, how we would react if we had a similar parliamentary system, which a lot of people say, well, maybe we should have. And I'm like, well, yeah, but are you okay with possible elections every, you know, 2, 3, 4 years? I mean, we can hardly handle it once every 4 years. Can you imagine, Matt, if a president said, yeah, this isn't working, I'm stepping down, let's have an election? Can you imagine that?
Well, you know, they're different, right? Because they don't last as long. They're about 5 weeks. So you get in and get out on it. But the way the British system really works is that it is designed to have the chief executive come from the majority party in the parliament, which means when the government takes power, they pass their legislation. And it's like pool. They run the table, passing bill after bill after bill, because both the executive and the legislature are the same party, until they essentially go too far. And then the public swings in the other direction. This is different from the U.S., where the whole U.S. system is designed to obstruct legislation going through. So, you know, we have our own frustration in that way.
Yeah, I guess the founders really didn't like that British system, so let's slow things down as much as we can. Matt, before we let you go, I couldn't let you leave without asking you, and we've talked about this for the past several months now. Ukraine, what do you see going there? We haven't talked about this for a while. Russia, Ukraine, Putin, Zelensky, give me your thoughts as to what's transpired in the last month or so there.
I think what's happening right now is the heavy weapons from the U.S. And NATO have finally reached theater. And you see a deliberate strategy right now, and just in the last few weeks, where Ukraine is targeting ammunition dumps on the Russian side. And they're essentially trying to blow up as many artillery shells as they can in order to even out the balance of Russian to Ukrainian artillery shells. Because Russia's strategy has essentially been to blow things to smithereens with their long-range artillery. And so if they have to conserve those shells, it changes their tactical engagement. And I think that's what's going on right now. And both sides are exhausted. Both sides are looking to find ways to refresh and re-up their manpower to bring more people into the front, to get them trained. And Russia is having a hard time doing that. And so I think you'll see this sort of a pause in the heavy fighting now for a few months as both sides are trying to generate more force. And then you'll see it tick up again in the fall, you know, September, October, something like that. And the real question there is, Will this strategy have worked and lowered Russia's ability to use its long-range weaponry? And will the new long-range weaponry on the Ukrainian side kind of even things out and allow Ukraine to start pushing Russian troops out of the country?
And finally, hooked in, Matt, to the Russia situation is the situation of WNBA star Brittany Griner. She pled guilty yesterday to possession of the cannabis oil vaping pen material, which is not a big deal here, but anything to do with marijuana, you know, people know is verboten in Russia, assuming these were implanted on her. But I'm thinking here, Matt, was the strategy for her, did somebody tell her, Matt, just plead guilty and there'll be an eventual prisoner swap? Because I guess that's what Putin wants, right? Doesn't he want some sort of arms dealer or drug dealer we have or something like that?
Yeah, he's looking for that kind of prisoner swap with an arms dealer. I mean, none of this is for certain yet, but it seems likely that she was advised by her Russian defense attorney that, look, you're going to get convicted anyway, so you might as well plead. Now, it is different in the Russian case. Just because she's pleaded guilty doesn't mean there's not a trial. She will go to a courtroom trial in spite of her plea, and will go through that. Evidence will be presented, and then she will be sentenced from there. So this does not short-circuit the trial phase like it does in the U.S.
Dr. Matthew Schmidt, University of New Haven, Professor of National Security, International Affairs, Political Science, and more. A great background. Matt, good to speak with you. Have a great weekend. We'll talk down the road, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely. You too.
Thanks, Dr. Matthew Schmidt, University of New Haven. Joe Biden unveils an executive order to protect abortion access. President Biden signing an executive order today aimed at preserving some access to abortion services, but again admitting Congress has the ultimate control over the issue right now. And he's right. He's right there. Both sides can scream and yell and cry and bitch and moan and bang their heads on the wall all they want. It's about elections. It's about elections. It's about how the country focuses. Joe Biden said, if you want to change the circumstance for women and even little girls in this country, please go out and vote, Mr. Biden said. I guess Joe's assuming that little girls want to have abortions, I guess. I'm sorry if that rubs you the wrong way. But, you know, the level to which the left is passing this off like it's a bag of Skittles here when it's a very serious issue to a lot of women in this country who agonize over this, but to use this as just a what they're using, it's a cheap campaign ploy, like the governor is here on Bowen. By the way, Bob Stefanowski has come out with a doozy of an internet ad regarding Dan Malloy and abortion. I'll play that for you in a couple of seconds. But Joe Biden saying, if you want to change the circumstance for women and even little girls in this country, please go out and vote. Well, Joe, people are voting, and they have aligned the country the way they're going to align it. And all of these polls come out show, at least at this point, I know some people hate to hear it, but I saw two or three more polls last night that were taken well after the U.S. Supreme Court said or did what it did on abortion. And abortion is not a top five issue even to a lot of voters and a lot of women. And, you know, one thing that I find interesting that the left and the pro-choice groups never talk about, and Bill Maher brought this up on his show Real Time on HBO a few weeks ago when he had a couple of guests, one pro-choice, one pro-life, and it was a pretty interesting exchange. But Bill Maher, who's, trust me, no conservative, and Bill Maher, who's no lover of kids and families and getting married and all that, he is who he is. He's a love-hate guy. But Bill Maher said, very interesting, you know what's never spoken of? And he's right. He was 100% right on this one. The pro-choice crowd in this country, and frankly, I could care less. It doesn't affect me in any way. I'm just looking at this from a purely political standpoint. You notice how there is never an accounting for how many millions and millions of women are pro-life. Nobody ever talks about that. You notice that? It's always, well, these unelected men and these men who can't have babies and men should have vasectomies. And if having a child were a constitutional choice to a man, then a man would want this, that, and the other. You notice how, and I don't know why it is, it's probably kind of awkward and they can't figure out an angle of attack on this one, but you ever notice that it's hardly ever mentioned by progressives how many millions of women, young and old, especially young in many parts of the country, are pro-life. I wonder why they don't mention that. Well, it doesn't fit the narrative. Because the way they talk, the way a lot of progressives talk, and the way the president seems to have spoken today, it's like every woman is pro-choice out there. And they're just not. See, this is the problem, is that people on the left and the right, they don't take their blinders off. They don't take their mask off. They don't take their blinders off. And they don't step back and say, you know what? Not everybody agrees with me. Or, you know what? Not everybody agrees with my side on this. I wonder why. Maybe I should listen to those people. But think about it. The blinders are on so tightly in society here. They are just so tight on both sides that everybody is up there cheering for their team, their uniform, Yankees, Red Sox, Celtics, Lakers. There's no nuance anymore to this, which, again, rings true in a piece I read last week where some pundit said, you know, this is probably a good thing for abortion because you can only scream and yell at each other for so long. When you finally look at each other and say, hey, we got to kind of figure out a better way on this, maybe. So Joe Biden today signing some stuff that it does a few things, but really not too much, because you have to win and or lose elections for this to make any difference. It's about who you elect. And for a lot of people on the pro-choice side, they're angry, and I can understand that if they feel that way, that about half the country doesn't agree with them. And that's got to be solved by people talking to each other and Congress getting together to find a middle ground here. But what are the odds that's going to happen? What are the odds it's going to happen with immigration or with guns or anything like that? I think we like this two different countries kind of thing. Like, we have one unified military. We have one unified IRS. We have, you know, one unified functioning of government. But for the rest of the stuff, hey, a lot of Americans are like, I'll live where I live. You live where you live. You live in your daily existence, and I'll take mine because I like it.